Hello and welcome to Back in My Play, episode number 6. This week we're going to be covering Zombies Ate My Neighbors for the Super Nintendo and for the Sega Genesis / Mega Drive, as well as Final Fight that came out on just about anything that could play video games in the late 80s and then early 90s. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me this week for the whole cast, we got, first off, Trey Gibson. Trey, how you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm always great. And awesome. We always also have Josh Hillier as well. Josh?
I'm doing extremely well, and this week I spent a little time getting to know the people in my neighborhood so that in the event of a zombie attack or zombie outbreak, I would know who they were so I could save them before they were eaten.
Great. We got a great show lined up for you. Obviously, as mentioned before, the first thing that we're going to be talking about is Zombies Ate My Neighbors. But I want to quickly ask the whole audience out there, if you are enjoying the podcast, for two things. One, subscribe through iTunes. And two, if you like the show, please submit a review. Submit a rating on iTunes. It would mean so, so much. And again, it helps us kind of spread the word of the podcast. So, like I said, first game this week is Zombies Ate My Neighbors. It came out in September 1993 in the United States and in Europe on January 27th, 1994. That's for the PAL areas. One thing you will notice, it did not get a release in Japan. It was developed by LucasArts and published by Konami. The Zombies Ate My Neighbors engine would also later be used for Ghoul Patrol, which was a direct sequel to Zombies Ate My Neighbors, which is really hard to find in the United States. It's a little bit more common in the PAL territories. And Big Sky Tower. The game's theme was subject to some censorship. The game was released before the ESRB inclusion, and before then, Nintendo did not want violence in their video games. So Nintendo of America ordered all depictions of blood and gore to be removed, or at least toned down into the color purple for the game, very much like Mortal Kombat at the time, going from blood to sweat. So also, in the European nations, censorship committees in the UK and Ireland and in, you know, several other European nations censored even more by having the game renamed to Zombies, just Zombies, and ordered other changes, including the replacement of chainsaw-wielding enemies, like in the fourth stage, with lumberjacks wielding axes, because that's a little bit less intimidating than a motorized blade of death. So some other cool stuff on it. Nintendo Power, just for reference, gave it a 3.8 out of 5, and they graded super hard back then, so that's a pretty good score. And also, one of the key members for the game, Mike Ebert, he went on to work on Metal Warriors, which is a super cool Super Nintendo game. If you can find it, it is like $150, but it is really cool. And then most recently, he was working on Tony Hawk Downhill Jam. And also, Josh, I know you dug up another cool fact about the game as well.
For those of you who remember Herc's Adventures on the PlayStation 1 and the Sega Saturn, you might notice some similarities if you play Zombies Ate My Neighbors first. And the reason for that is that it includes some elements of the base Zombie Ate My Neighbors engine. So if you like Zombies Ate My Neighbors, like I do, you will definitely want to play Herc's Adventures. It's really hard to find. It's not on PSN, and that's pretty expensive on the Saturn, but I think it's definitely worthwhile if you like the overhead combat style, saving people along the way kind of thing, set in a Greek mythology kind of universe.
I guess that's one of those games we might have to visit, because I have no idea what it is, and you seem to be, you know, talking like it's a pretty good game.
Yeah, well, and it also has really nice art that still holds up well, which not everything from the 32-bit era we can say that sure about. So, you know, that's something to consider.
You know if it came out in Japan at all?
I do not know, but I know it was another Konami jam.
Okay, cool. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to be venturing into Dr. Tongue's 55 Levels of Danger, so stick around.
Thank you.
Okay, welcome back to September 1993, or, you know, possibly early 1994, if you, you know, speak in the Queen's English or other tongues of Europe. And we're here to, you know, talk about our history with Zombies Ate My Neighbors. And I'm going to be honest, I'm going to go first because I really don't have much of a history with the game. I had never played it up until this past week. And the only time I ever saw it was, you know, again, referencing Nintendo Power, because that's kind of all we had back then. I saw it in there and it did not grab me one bit. Like, it had that 50s, 60s kind of horror vibe to it. And that was not really appealing to me whatsoever. I wanted like sci-fi shooters, action. I wanted guns. I didn't want a friggin' water pistol. I wanted machine guns. I wanted Contra 3. I wanted to blow stuff up. And I totally skipped it. Never rented it. Never touched it at a friend's house. I didn't know anyone that had it. And it, to be honest, like, again, it just didn't hit the radar. But Josh, this is a game that you wanted to do on the show.
Yeah, so I'm responsible for making these two guys play Zombies Ate My Neighbors this week, and hopefully I'll also be responsible for making some of you play it, but you guys will have a more pleasant experience. I love Zombies Ate My Neighbors, and I received it because it was very cheap, which, you know, sometimes you can say, well, something that's really cheap, that says a lot about its quality. But my mom got me that and Rocket Knight Adventures sort of out of nowhere one day because KB Toys had them both for like $15 or something. So I guess they were clearing out some Konami stock. And I gave them both a try. So obviously, that you were at the mercy of your parents in terms of what games you received at that age. I mean, I guess I was 10 years old or so. And anyway, I burst it open first. I thought it looked a little bit cooler than Rocket Knight Adventures. And it was. It's just, it was something that I immediately got into. And my friend and I, one of my really good friends who's in my wedding, we would actually spend time playing the game together on the phone. So sort of a version of online play in that we would start playing the game at the same time and see who could get farther and sort of trade tips on, like, well, if you go to the bottom left-hand corner, you're going to find a chest, and inside that chest, there will be a bazooka or a cross or whatever. So we would talk about all these things and kind of and build these strategies for our runs. And looking back on it, it's a lot like playing a roguelike game today, except obviously it's not a roguelike. But in terms of if you die or if you get to the levels where there's only one person surviving and you let that person be killed, you have to start the game completely over unless you're using passwords. So it feels a little bit like playing Spelunky or something, where you have to really put a lot of thought into each run you make, and you get a little bit farther every time because you understand the game's mechanics more and more. So anyway, yeah, my friend and I talked about it on the phone, and we just got really into it. We were these big Zombie Ate My Neighbors nerds when nobody else in the school was talking about it, kind of like what Kevin was describing. Zombies Ate My Neighbors was not a very well-known game. It was definitely sort of a B-tier game, what we would call a B-tier game today, but just lots of charm and strangeness. And I still have a notebook where I wrote down the passwords for every level. And I was really excited when Ghoul Patrol came out, but then kind of ended up bummed out by the time I actually played it.
I think your recollection of that time period is correct. I just think you were mistaken when you said it was a better game than Rocket Knight. I think that's something that we'll just forget about. Trey, do you have any history with this game?
None at all. I never really heard of it. I didn't play it back in the day. The only time I've really heard about it before we talked about it this week is when it came out on Virtual Console. I was talking with one of my buddies, and he was like going on and on about it. He had the Sega Channel back in the day, and he said that was a game that he played all the time on the Sega Channel.
Holy crap, man! That is, dude, you had the coolest friend. He had the Sega Channel, man. That is,
yeah, he had the Sega Channel
every day.
Yeah,
no joke.
Unfortunately, I did not know him during that time. I met him. We were probably like 12 or 13 when we met. But wow, that's so cool. He talks about that all the time. He said that was like one of the coolest things he had ever done. His parents got it for him pretty much from the time it was implemented.
For the people out there, can you what was the Sega Channel?
Well, I never had it. So based on what I know of it, it was basically a subscription that you could get. And you would basically have, I don't know if you had to buy an adapter. I think you did. But basically you would plug your cable into the Sega somehow, and you would have a channel where you could play like certain games every month, and they would alternate them out.
So there was a cart that you plugged into the game slot, and then the cable plugged into that cart.
Yeah, it had like RAM on it or whatever.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah, I knew it was something. I mean, it had to be plugged into the cable somehow. I didn't know if it was like a peripheral or what, but him and another friend of mine talk about it all the time, and they're just like, "Oh, you have no idea what you were missing out on." You know, I was like, "Well, I never owned a Sega, you know, during that time period, so." You know, what can I say?
How forward thinking was that, though, man? Having the Sega Channel, which, A, it was like the very first subscription service out there, like, you know, when the Game Tap and stuff like that came along. But also, the craziest thing about it, and I can't remember, I think it was probably on like Retronauts or the A4 Play, but they were talking about with the Sega Channel. Games like Mortal Kombat. No, it's actually the last couple of weeks I've been re-listening to like starting at the beginning old Bombcast episodes. They're talking about on there and how like Mortal Kombat 3 Ultimate, Mortal Kombat 3, when it came out in the Sega Channel, you could only get half the fighters because there was only so much RAM on that cart that the cable would go into.
Oh no! How would they choose?
Well, they chopped off so many games, or like you'd get games with levels missing or. You know, parts of it, like the multiplayer taken out to make sure that, you know, it would be playable on the service. But, you know, you look back at stuff like that and, man, I bought an X-Band, like when they're on clearance at Babbage's. And I obviously never used it because my parents are going to let me use the internet to play NBA Jam on my Genesis. But, man, there was some cool, like, innovative stuff back then on Super Nintendo and Genesis where they were just – like trying some really crazy things to expand the market and to expand the possibilities.
Well, there was that program in Japan for the Super NES.
The Teleview,
Yes, the Teleview, which had exclusive versions of games.
Yeah, there was one on eBay this week. I almost bought it. But it would be stupid because it's impossible to use. But yeah, like BS Zelda was one of the big games that was on there that would have almost like a schedule, and you would – worked like satellite radio, so you could get the programming from satellite radio into the Teleview through the Super Famicom, and you would actually get instructions on like quests to do in the Zelda game. I just feel like, Trey, that thing was made for you. And if we ever do get time travel and the ability to, you know, geolocate to get you back to Japan sometime during that era, so you could get on this Teleview and play some BS Zelda. But I know people have like ported it to like a cart, so you can actually get like a repro cart with kind of the BS Zelda stuff on it if you're really into it.
Yeah, I've read about it. I, you know, did a little bit of research. Apparently you can, like, you don't play as Link, you play as, like, you can pick a male or a female character to play as. It was released like over periods of time, but you know, that would be one thing I would definitely want to try out for sure.
All right. I think, are we good for the past? Or are we ready to go to the present?
I don't know. I just want to talk about Teleview.
Yeah.
Let's not get into weird, crazy Famicom and Super Famicom and Mega Drive accessories. We're going to take a quick break. We get some more music from Zombies Ate My Neighbors. That creeps me the hell out. So I'm going to skip the music and then get right back to the talking once again. But if you like it, you can listen to it. Stick around. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back in 2013, and I went through eBay. I picked up a copy of Zombies Ate My Neighbors, and also went down to the, on the news front, preemptive, but I got a Sega Genesis. I got the Model 1 with the high-def graphics and everything, came on Saturday. And
smoking.
Oh, it looks so sick, man. It's in such nice shape, and I got it for like $40, which I can't complain. But the cool thing about this episode is that I not only played it on the Super Nintendo, but once this Genesis came, I went down to a local game shop in Salem and picked up a copy of it on Genesis, which was in terrible shape, and it was overpriced at $18, but I bought it for the sake of the podcast, and I can give my impressions on both Super Nintendo and Genesis. So how should we do this? Because I played it on both. I know you guys played it on Super Nintendo. Maybe you guys should go first. Let's talk about the differences between the two versions real quick, okay? So the Super Nintendo version is pretty much superior in every way. It has cleaner music. It has full screen compared to the Genesis version, which has about a fourth of the right side cut off, turned all black, and that's where your health shows up, your items. And one of the pros and one of the things that I really enjoyed is that it has the map always on the screen, so you don't have to hit pause to bring the map up. One other thing, thank God I have a 6-button Genesis controller, because playing that game with 3 buttons, I wouldn't even know how you would do it. But thankfully, I had a 6-button controller, so it's like pretty much the same buttons as the Super Nintendo version. But obviously, since you're switching between 2 different categories of items, I don't even know how you would do it. I don't know if you have to like hit start like Street Fighter to switch between punches and kicks to switch between the two.
It was a select button.
But there is no select button.
Oh, it was start then. Yeah.
It must have been start. So anyways, the graphics on the Genesis are actually pretty good, but like I said, it's like that whole back in the day of playing PC games where you would make the screen smaller in Doom and Wolfenstein so you get a better frame rate. That's pretty much what they did on the Genesis version so they can make the graphics look better. And to be honest, they probably had to do it because of the limited button layout too, so you could get to that map as well. So I'm going to say this up front. I guess I'm going to jump right into it because I have kind of a different view. I guess Trey and I both are going to go up against Josh on this because...
And lose.
Yeah, well, I actually liked the Genesis version more than the Super Nintendo version. Because I liked the music. Believe it or not, this is going to sound really stupid. I actually liked the music better because it was a little bit simpler. And I didn't like the something about the Super Nintendo music was so off-putting. Like, it made me feel so uncomfortable. And I'm dead serious. Like, that playing that game in broad daylight, I started feeling really uneasy, and that maybe that's what they were going for. But when you get to like that fourth stage with the chainsaw guys, like I honestly, this game was scaring. It was scaring me. Like it was not condemned like on the Xbox level, but it was literally causing me to feel uncomfortable. It made me feel uneasy, even though the game, like most for the most part, takes place in the daylight. But the way like it's set up. Like, there's just so much tension. It's a hard game. And when you get to that fourth level, it hits the fan because you're going up against these chainsaw-toting dudes that are very powerful. They're very fast. And it makes the game really hard. So the Genesis version, like, in the music, it doesn't have the zombies making noises and stuff like that. So, and it also just sounded more like... happy. It sounded simpler. It didn't have that creepiness that the preciseness that the Super Nintendo was able to produce. So maybe that made me feel better.
No, the Super Nintendo music does sort of sound like some sort of like 1940s, 1950s, like Halloween soundtrack that you would go out and buy today. You know, that would be like a retro album that comes with like 120-second tracks on it, you know, with this like with these weird organ parts with a bunch of reverb on them. It definitely has that vibe going on.
I couldn't pinpoint it, and it sounds so stupid because that never happens. Like I don't really play like horror games really anymore, not since like probably Condemned 2. I can't play that Amnesia stuff on Steam or whatever the other game that's like that. But it just didn't make me feel good. Trey, what were your like first impressions of the game? Because I know you kind of obviously you don't have a history with the game, but it seems like you're kind of on the side of me. Is like I think this is super overhyped. Like this podcast is about nostalgia, which is great. I think a lot of people have really good memories of this game, but I think it's talked up and maybe loved more than it should be. It's just like kind of like an odd game.
Yeah, you know, I was reading somewhere that somebody, you know, says it's a pretty big cult classic. Do not want to be involved with a cult that thinks this is a classic. I didn't care for it. I don't think it was a terrible game, but I mean, it's just I had kind of a bad experience, partly because I think the cart that I bought, I got it from the flea market. I think the cart that I bought was I had some issues because my sound was distorted throughout a lot of the game, and you know, I listened to the soundtrack like
was
in
it
other
like the
places.
Volume levels that were messed up?
It was making a lot of cracking.
Okay, because I noticed on one of the stages, like the volume like shoots up really high on one of the songs. Like at one point, like again, maybe it's just to cause like unease, but on one of the notes, like it just goes super high volume, then whip back down again. It was kind of weird.
It wasn't every step that I took, but anytime I made contact with an enemy, I got hit, I shot, you know, or fired a weapon. Anytime I did that, it would make like a cracking noise. And at one point, I just muted the game because I was so frustrated with it. And I tried to find another cart just so I could, you know, go that route. And I almost considered just getting a ROM for it. But I, you know, by the time I got to a certain point in the game, I was just like, I'm really just not having fun with it. It just didn't appeal to me. It was kind of a difficult game in some aspects, but you know, it just wasn't my cup of tea.
Yeah, you're right about it being difficult because it kind of requires you to play through from the beginning. You know, like if you want to have enough items to actually be successful and you use passwords and start at like level 17, you're really going to have a hard time. So to ask somebody to start a game completely over that takes 50 levels or whatever, that's really a pretty tall order. So I get what you're talking about, Trey.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was fun. I can understand why people like it. Just for me, it didn't do it for me. I mean,
Well, before we trash on it, let's.
I'm not trying to trash me because I understand some people like it.
Oh, yeah.
And that's perfectly fine. But, you know, just me personally, I didn't care for it.
Well, I think that's one of the cool things about doing this podcast one of the cool things that's going to come of this is that we're going to play games that we've never played before. And like, it's going to be interesting to see how we react to them, you know, 20 years after the fact that they came out. I mean, this game came out literally 20 years ago. Yep. And it's like, you know, what do our adult selves think of this game where maybe it was a little bit more appealing to a kid, but I know Josh is going to talk about some positive stuff, but I want to be honest. Like I thought it was awesome. Like the level of variety is great. I think it's not like a Robotron or it's not like even a Smash TV where you feel like you're going into the same room over and over and over again. And someone in the thread likened it to Smash TV, which actually helped it click for me a little bit. I'm like, man, I wish we were playing Smash TV this week instead though. That's a great game. And, oh, pro tip. I also picked up Smash TV at the game store for the Genesis. Don't buy it. It's impossible to play. I just, for some reason, didn't think about that before picking it up. But
yeah, because doesn't it need twin sticks?
Yeah, or like on the Super Nintendo, the YX, B, and A is your second stick. It mm-hmm. is basically you can shoot in front of you and behind you. And it's so weird. So anyways, I really did like the variety of it. And you know, the weapon variety was super cool too. And the like gigantic bosses, like the toddler on level 8, was super cool. And it was just a super weird boss. It had that LucasArts feel, like that, you know, early 90s, late 80s LucasArts feel. Like it just, you can see it throughout the whole art of the game.
Yeah, this game is a very campy affair. Like it has that B movie vibe. It's a B game, and it also has the B movie vibe, like with a 40-foot toddler, and mixing elements from different types of horror within the same level sometimes. So to be running from like a mummy, and then a werewolf jumps out, And then you see that there's a clone of yourself running around on the lower level. And this is all like in a castle level. It definitely doesn't take itself too seriously.
Yeah, and the clones are really cool. Like coming up against clones of yourself that are kind of hard to attack. They're almost like in Zelda Link to the Past, where you fight those guys once you get the bow and arrow that kind of follow your movement, or they mimic your movement, but the opposite. So it makes it a little bit harder to attack those guys. Trey, I thought you'd appreciate that. And I think they're cool enemies to fight. I think one of the things that I hinted to is maybe I just didn't play it enough. I mean, I put like probably 5 or 6 hours in the game between the two versions. Like I played the crap out of this game across a couple nights, and I found that maybe I just didn't learn how to use the weapons well enough. I think it's one of those things that's just part of the era where it doesn't necessarily teach you what all the weapons do. You kind of have to have the instruction manual. Otherwise, you're not going to know what each of them do. But I did find some things kind of annoying about the game. Like once you get in eyesight, or once the person that you're going to rescue pops up in your board, they're immediately vulnerable. So if you have a zombie that is like a foot from them, and you just happen to walk up to them once that zombie is near them, or that zombie's near them once they come into your like quote unquote eye view, they're screwed. They die immediately, and that's like, what was I supposed to do? There was no way for me to save that person. I was walking directly towards them, and I couldn't have killed the zombie before then. It was just an instant kill. There was nothing I could do. So that was kind of a pain in the butt. And also, I don't know, was there any way to deal with like that fungus that spreads in some of the levels?
I still haven't figured it out, and I've been playing the game for 20 years.
Okay, so you automatically, no matter what, to get to some people, you have to take damage to get to them. There's no other way to get to them.
Now, are you talking about like the pink goo kind of stuff?
That no, there was like mushrooms. It would be like mushrooms that would spread out, and they would be in my path, and there would be literally no way to get to like the people that are, that I need to get to. I would have to take, one or two hits damage to get to them.
You might be talking about the part where you could use the weed eater.
Oh. See?
And if you're using the weed eater there, you actually can clear a path.
Okay. Then that's on me. I did not I thought I tried all the weapons that were in my inventory, but maybe I didn't go through.
Well, and the game never tells you that at all. So then it gives you like 10 weapons.
But that's fair enough. That's part of the era, and that's one of those things that if I rented it, I would probably have the instruction guide, or if I bought it, I would probably play this game until I, really, really figured it out. But I really enjoyed playing a lot of the Genesis version. It was a really good experience on there as well. And if you have a Genesis and not a Super Nintendo, it's not a bad version to pick up. You're missing some of the screen, but you do get some of the benefits of having like the map layout on there as well for you. All right, so Josh, I'm gonna give you a chance to kind of defend yourself or defend the game. What memories do you have of this game that make it so cherished?
Okay, Zombies Ate My Neighbors, top down view. First of all, anytime I see a game with a top down view, I like it. Even if it's sort of the 3/4 quarter view thing, like what you see in the old XCOM and Fallout games. I just respond well to that. It reminds you of Link to the Past. So I like that. I like the atmosphere. It's just very funny, very goofy, very like postmodern, referencing things constantly. The levels have funny names, like level 13 is called Chopping Mall. Evening of the Undead, and then Attack of the 40-Foot Toddler, stuff like that, where it tells you very much what you're getting into, but in a funny way. And there's sort of title cards like you would see in these classic movies. The music is terrible, but there's something about it that just feels like the kind of music that you would hear while watching like a 50s movie of this nature. Like with these grating organ parts, and I think Kevin described it well when he was saying that it's just sort of unsettling. And Trey was saying that he had to just play it on mute. I can understand that because it does sound sort of like intimidating and just like uncomfortable to listen to. And because some of the notes just really are sort of off key. There's not the notes you would expect in a progression of several notes in a row. It's almost like what people do with metal sometimes, really, really nasty sounding notes from time to time, to the point that my wife and daughter would seem confused in the room with me, just hearing it out of context without actually watching me play the game at the same time. So I do feel bad for them for having to listen to that. But the music is all part of it. You can just imagine someone playing an organ, maybe somebody who's losing their mind a little bit, and so they start playing things that don't really make sense. I love the keys in the game. So the game requires you to collect a lot of keys, and you use these keys to go through doors, to open chest, and actually those are the only two occasions, to open doors and open chest. But if you're careful and you conceal and hold on to your bazooka ammo really well, you can actually use that to blow through walls sometimes if the wall has a weak spot. So you can save your keys more often if you start to get down on your resources. So that's one of the things I like about the game, is sort of the risk-reward system, that you can't just gun your way through every level. You're holding on to ammo. Sure, you'll always have a lot of squirt gun ammo, but you won't have as much of your other ammo. You won't have, you'll probably never have any more than 30 shots with a bazooka at any given time. And that's the most powerful weapon in the game. And even things like silverware, which you really need for the werewolves, for example, that stuff is hard to come by. So I do enjoy that sort of risk management version of the game. It adds an element of survival horror. But the game's really cleverly designed so that you could end up in situations sometimes where you're all out of keys and you're seeing a survivor on the other side and you're trying to figure out how you're going to get to him. And then you make your way to some like corner of the level and there's a military guy who needs to be saved and he's holding onto a bazooka. And so then you have a bazooka and you can blow through the wall. And you start to realize these things that if you just like spend enough time exploring, that will really reward you and allow you to hold onto your resources more. So I think maybe, maybe Pac-Man would be the first survival horror game if you really think about it. But this definitely should fall into that category of like arcadey survival horror for those of you who are Resident Evil fans as well as fans of Smash TV. That's my pitch.
No, and again, I think what, you know, to give the game the benefit of the doubt, there's tons of depth to it. And, you know, again, it might just be one of those things where I didn't have all those things kind of at my side on which weapons to use against which enemies. I love the kind of soda cans and stuff like that. I loved having the clown, the blow up clown for the chainsaw guys. Like that was super funny. And
talk about an irritating noise.
Oh, it was effective though. And, yeah. I think, again, it's one of those really unique games that, if it has a part of your, or it's a part of your history, your video game childhood, I can totally understand why it would be, at the, top of your list of favorite games. It's, if you liked it, I could see why you really liked it, you know?
Yeah. It's, you talked about someone in the thread likening it to Smash TV. And I also would throw Doom in there a little bit with the key system and with sort of managing resources, because in Doom, you can end up stuck with just your pistol if you're not careful. And I feel like Zombies Ate My Neighbors has that same sort of special place in my heart. Maybe I just like managing resources. Perhaps I've chosen the wrong calling in life. But yeah, it definitely has a big part in my childhood.
Yeah, Resident Evil, man. Resident Evil, when you had to, hold on to the good ammo, you got to hold on to those grenade launcher ammo for this gigantic spider. So
thrifty living. I like it.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to be right back with the rival to the Streets of Rage series. We're going to be going with Mayor Hagger and we're going to try to go save his daughter. So stick around. Be right back. See if we can do it. Before we get into the segment regarding Final Fight, I want to let the audience out there know that I'm going to be giving away my copy of Zombies Ate My Neighbors for the Super Nintendo to a lucky listener. So to get access to this sweepstakes, and keep in mind, we only have like 400 listeners. You have a pretty good chance, and you got to think about the people that are actually going to go through the effort to go through this process to submit. So to get access to this contest, what you have to do is first submit a review on iTunes. Then you get to go to backinmyplay.com, go to the contact page, and then just submit your name, submit your username on iTunes so I can see that you submit a review, and you're entered. What I'm going to do is I'll use a random number generator, and I'm going to basically just however many entries that I get, I can submit that number to the random number generator, and it will spit out a number. It will be the number in order that I received them. So you have a pretty good chance of winning this. So again, submit a review on iTunes. And if you have already, just send me your username on iTunes and just please be honest. Like if someone starts sending in like the same username, or if I get this, three people that send in the same username, it's going to be easy to figure that out. So honor system, please. And hopefully you'll win. And let's try to keep this preferably between the United States. Sorry that shipping to the rest of the world costs like thousands of dollars. So anyway.
Yeah, and whoever the lucky winner is, your copy of Zombies Ate My Neighbors will be autographed by Brad Pitt. It's sort of a cross-promotional thing that we're doing in honor of World War Z. So yep. That's another reason to be excited about this.
Yeah, he also does my lawn. He cuts my lawn, so he's really good at that stuff.
Is he good?
It's great. You wouldn't tell, but this segment we're going to be talking about Final Fight, and it came out in December '89 in the arcades, and then winter 1990 on the Super Famicom when that came out in Japan, and then in fall 1991 in the United States where it came out on the Super Nintendo. And we got some. This game has some weird ass history, so let's get into it. So the it started development as a sequel to Street Fighter, as a sequel to the original Street Fighter, which came out in 87. But as the rise of Double Dragon kind of like hit the arcades, Capcom was like, "Hey guys, can we make like a Double Dragon like game? Because those things are super hot right now." And that's what the machines, the quarters are being pumped into. So they created Final Fight, and that's why you kind of see some similarities throughout the series. And you even see like in Final Fight 2, which is a great, that's a good game. Like Final Fight 2 is kind of good, where Chun-Li is in the background of one of the stages, which, kind of follows with the cohesion between the two series. But anyways, it was obviously ported to the Super Nintendo and the Super Famicom, but as a single player game, when it came out, like you could only play as either Cody or Hager. Guy was not in it. And that's why we saw Final Fight Guy come out in Japan. And also, I believe it was a Blockbuster exclusive in the United States. So if you wanted to play as Guy, which then basically what they did is like they, because there was limited room on the game, they replaced Cody with Guy. So it would either be Cody and Hager or Guy and Hager. And Guy's really not that great, so you're not really missing out on much. Don't worry about it. So some weird things about the Super Nintendo port is, like I said, it removed the co-op. So it's a single-player game, and they took out like the transitions between levels. Like you would think that the player would walk down the stairs after the first stage and go into the second stage. Instead, they just kind of fade to black, and then they fade into the next stage. And also, the Super Nintendo could only display 2 to 3 enemies on screen at a time, compared to the CPS1 arcade version, which could display up to 9 to 10 enemies on the screen. Like this is like when in terms of ports, this is not a great port.
I get my ass kicked by 3 enemies at a time.
Well, that's
I can't
what they
imagine.
Did is they bumped up the difficulty up, and that's one of the problems that I have with the game that we'll get into in a little bit. But needless to say that, the game was really different. There were many ports. Like they ported it across so many different platforms, all the computers out in Europe. And also one of the best versions is on the Sega CD, where you do have co-op. You have great Redbook audio, CD quality music, and a much more arcade-like experience on there. So that's the history of Final Fight. Here's some music from the game. We're going to come back and talk about a history with the game. So stick around. Okay, so let's go back into 1991, I guess at the earliest. If you got your launch Super Nintendo in that summer of 91, the pickings were relatively slim. And when Final Fight came out, you said, hey, man, I saw that in the arcade. I want to get it so I can play it at home. You brought it home, and where's the Player 2 option? Oh, wait, guess what? They effed you over just like they did on Double Dragon on the NES. So you can only play as one player, which is a huge bummer. And when I originally first saw the game, it was at my buddy Dan's house, Danny Zapanthis, which I can't believe I remember this kid's name because I only went to school with him until second grade. And I think he got arrested when I was in high school or something like that. So that's the only other time that his name got brought up. And he had Final Fight, and he also had Mortal Kombat 1. And I went over to his house once. And at that one time, he went downstairs to his basement and played Final Fight and Mortal Kombat. And again, it was like a huge bummer because like he played it, and he got super far in the game. Like we were playing, you know, till you ran out of continues. And then it was like the trade-off situation where then I would play and couldn't make it through the first stage with all my, you know, lives and stuff like that. So then he would get the controller back. It sucked. And that wasn't cool. Like the point of these games, the point of brawlers, beat 'em ups, whatever you want to call them, is to play them co-op. That's why Double Dragon 2 is way better on the NES. And that's why when the Sega Genesis or the Sega Master System like came out in the United States, Double Dragon came out on that. It was a huge part of their advertising. It's like, yeah, you can play two-player Double Dragon on Master System, not like that shitty Nintendo console. This is 8-bit, but it's way better 8-bit. Anyways, so, you know, Danny was, you know, whatever he was, and, you know, he's probably in jail, but that's when I got to play Final Fight, and it didn't really register that much. I never really saw any of the sequels, and I didn't even know there were sequels till the first trip to Japan where I saw Final Fight 2 on in a game shop. And I mean, the best thing about this game, guys, let's be real, parallax scrolling. Making use of that what's that chip called?
Mode 7.
Mode 7 chip or whatever. So
Yeah, F-Zero used it as well in a few other games.
I think this was Mode 5. Mode 5 was parallax scrolling. But anyways, that was one of the great things of the Super Nintendo. But, you know, I don't know. Trey.
Dude.
No, I want to. Trey, when you're a Super Nintendo guy. Did you like this game?
I did. I got this game. I don't remember when I got this, but it was when I was younger. I actually have a funny story about this game. Well, not really like super funny, but I had a friend that had it as well, and we would, you know, like talk about it at school and everything. Of course, we couldn't play co-op, which kind of sucked. But his mom actually flipped out when she saw that he was playing it. We were probably 8 or 9, and there's an enemy. I think you encounter him early on. His name's El Gato. He kind of looks Middle Eastern, and he has like knives. And she saw that and flipped out and burned the copy of the game.
And you don't mean ripped it to a computer?
Wait, she
no,
literally
I mean
lit it
she
on fire?
She lit it on fire in front of him. She's very, 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 very religious.
Hey, welcome to the South, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Sometimes,
Sorry, yeah,
Southern listeners, but
yeah,
yeah, two of us I'm are Southern people, yeah, so you know, I mean, we can say this stuff.
Truth hurts, but yeah, that I thought, you know, that was kind of funny because I mean she flipped out. It was just, you know, a character design, but because he had knives and he looked Middle Eastern, she said absolutely not.
Man, did she but, know like it? You know, it was made by a Japanese company.
Probably
all
not.
Of our money's going to Japan.
Yeah,
and there's a character named Sodom.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I thought it was funny that she got rid of that, but he had Bible Adventures. No, like I like this game a lot, and you know I mentioned this I think either when we talked about Streets of Rage at one point we brought up Final Fight, and a lot of the characters' names kind of crack me up. But there's a wrestler type guy that you encounter. His name's I think it's Andore. I think that's how you pronounce it. But he resembles Andre the Giant. You can tell he was clearly inspired by him. But
I think his name is Andre.
No, there's an O in there somewhere.
There's a slight difference? Okay.
Yeah, just, you know, for copyright purposes.
He's the one who's going to be in the next Street Fighter, so I think they've gotten over that over the years. And they're just calling really? It right now.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I don't know who you're talking about.
Yeah. But you fight him, but I always got stuck at the fight with the guy that had the sword, the samurai guy, Katana, I think is his name. Always got stuck at him. He would kick my ass when I was a little kid. So, but I loved the game. I thought it was great. You know, having co-op would be a lot more fun, but it was a game that even though I wasn't very good at and it was very difficult, I enjoyed playing. And
did any of you guys rent Final Fight Guy from your local Blockbuster store?
I did not. Final Fight 1 is the only one I've actually played.
Whenever Blockbuster had some sort of exclusive thing, which they did somewhat often.
Clay Fighter 63 and a third. Director's
there you go.
Cut, whatever it was. Yeah,
that game's worth a lot of money now, too.
The instruction book's worth a lot of money.
Ah, because yeah, you lose this.
Yeah, thing. So like the instruction book is kind of hard to come by because, you know, how many times would people lose the instructions from a rental store? And by the way, if you're into retro stuff, follow Steve P. Lin on Twitter. He is an arcade collector, and he always posting super cool retro stuff. Like he just posted a picture of like 100 original Game Boy games that I'm sure he went through eBay or something to get, and he's using it for a project. But he always has like really cool trivia, and we were talking back and forth about like how Jeff Gerstmann, like a copy of this game for the TurboGrafx just sold for $6,000 opened. And Jeff Gerstmann owns a sealed copy of it. Like it's got to be worth like close to $450,000. I mean, that's my estimate. That's my Antiques Roadshow estimate. But Josh, what's your history with this one?
Okay. Final Fight. Yeah, I played Final Fight Guy, by the way. What I was going to say a second ago is that anytime Blockbuster had some sort of exclusive thing, I was all over it. It's just, you know, the idea of exclusivity, which might be why we're all so into game trailers today or whatever, right, with the exclusives. I was all over it. So I never owned this game, nor did I ever see it set on fire. But I did like it a lot as a boy. And I don't know. I think I like the big sprites, like these big characters. Like they're literally large. They fill up a lot of the screen, and like the combat just feels really good. Like you just feel like you're really pummeling people. But let me say something. I had this on my heart. Okay, this is real talk from me, Josh. Here we go. Brawlers or beat 'em ups. We're going to only call them one of those two things. I know some countries call them fighting games, but that's not what a fighting game is. So they're either brawlers or beat 'em ups, and they're just not very good. Like just as a genre, you start to get into sort of rote gameplay, right? Of just like pounding a button, and occasionally they'll factor in like some moves in terms of like double tapping forward and then pressing the button. But for the most part, you're just kind of walking around and mashing buttons. So let's just be completely honest that most of these games that people really want to be re-released, you know, there was a big cry for the X-Men beat 'em up to be released on Xbox Live Arcade and PSN a few years ago, and then it finally was. And there's been a big push for some other games as well. When you Simpsons actually sit down Arcade. And play them, yeah, Simpsons Arcade, that's one that people are like, oh, that game's so awesome. But then you go and play it 20 years later, and it's with Infinite continues, and it's really not so awesome. So I still, maybe perhaps just to spite Kevin, I will choose this game as being better than Streets of Rage 2, but I will not consider it to be just a great game to play.
You guys are blinded by your Nintendo bullshit goggles, okay? Because...
Yeah. Because
Streets of Rage... I don't know what you're talking about.
All right, hold on. First off, fun fact, I don't know if this is on Game Trailers anymore, but I interned at Game Trailers when I finished after college, and one of the videos I produced was like the top 10 remakes gamers want to most see remade, and part of that was I think it was remade or like show up on Xbox Live Arcade, and one of it was like Simpsons and X-Men Arcade and Sunset Riders. So if you could find that, good on you. But the thing that I want to say is, wait, what? Where are we? Are we in the past or the future?
We're kind of drifting in and out of the two.
Okay. I will say this. In the past, once I played Streets of Rage 2, I knew it was a better game. Do you guys have anything about the past? And we'll just open up the floodgates of debate for the final segment.
No, it was a more fun game to play in the arcade than on a console, I will say.
All right, buckle up, guys, because we're about to go in Streets of Rage 2 versus Final Fight, and why, you know, I'm going to debate and maybe have to edit this out so I sound right. Stick around. We'll be right back. We're back and we're here to more or less do the lifelong debate, you know, whether it be vanilla or chocolate, Mario or Sonic, or
Luigi,
Streets of Mario or Luigi, Streets of Rage, or Final Fight. And you guys go first, because I you know, tell me why this is a good game, Trey.
Because it's just better than Streets of Rage 2.
All right, Josh, why is this a good game?
No. Hold on now.
Trey already explained it.
It's more because, I like it better because I played it, you know, back in the day. It holds up to me. A couple of things. I wish it had co-op. I think that would really, truly solidify it as a better game. But for me, it has a lot of nostalgic value, and it's just a fun beat 'em up. I mean, it's a difficult game. It has its moments where, you know, it can be quite frustrating. But I think the over-the-top, it's got kind of a campy feel to it, like with the ridiculous names and what the enemies look like. They're some of the stupidest-looking enemies I've ever seen. Like, if I saw these people huddled in the street, I would not go down that street. But, you know, it just holds up to me. It's a fun game, and, you know, I think nostalgia is a big part of why I like it more.
That makes sense, nostalgia. I'm going to present the case of anytime you have a video game and you put the word final in front of it, it's therefore a better game.
Five more of them, you mean?
Yeah, you just have to keep piling them on. Final Fantasy.
You got anything? You got anything before I open it up?
Dude, yeah, okay. I'm gonna give you some things to think about before you open up your can. Okay, tight gameplay. I feel like it feels better to play this game. Art that just pops. The fiery body, right? When somebody catches on fire, it's the same fiery body that you see in Street Fighter 2. That's a really cool thing. If you pick up a beer, what happens? You get better. Your health is replenished. That's funny. Sometimes you will just randomly end up in a boxing ring fighting a sword-wielding guy named Sodom. You know, we don't need to know why. It just happens. And I also wrote this. There's a huge wrestler guy named Abigail. So that kind of plays on the names that Trey was talking about just a minute ago. So great sense of humor. Hagar is an awesome character. You know, he just looks cool. He's huge. He has that spin move that he does where he can kind of clear out the room. That's my case for Final Fight. The word final, the eye-popping art, Hagar being really cool, and the strange things such as beer refilling your health and wrestlers named Abigail.
Okay.
Therefore better than Streets of Rage 2.
All right, I don't have anything that's the size of a can. I have a black hole that goes into I have a Einstein-Rosen bridge that goes to a parallel world that is just full of shit about this game. So you guys got to keep in mind that last week I played through Streets of Rage 2, arguably the best. No, it's the best. It's the best. It's arguably the best.
So you can't even say it.
It's tough because you have Turtles in Time. You have games. I mean, there's so many great like games at Konami and Capcom and even the Technos guys that did Double Dragon, Rare with Battletoads. It's like there's so many great beat-em-ups of this era. But when you compare the two, all right, first off, guess what? In Streets of Rage 1, you can play co-op. In the first game, they should have done something, whether it be make it less beautiful, but allow me to play with a buddy, because beat-em-ups, you know what? Josh is totally right. Today, beat-em-ups aren't super appealing unless you have someone next to you to play with. Playing them online, like through an internet connection, like I played through Streets of Rage 2 with my buddy on PSN, and still it wasn't the same, even though we were even talking on our cell phones. But let me just run down some stuff real quick.
That case, hold on, I'll give you this argument. You get the multiplayer point, because you're right. Beat-em-ups need multiplayer. So
okay,
that's a point for you.
The music is boring. It's super boring music. The story is it's got a really cool, awesome, dumb story. I'll give it that. Like yep. Mayor Hagar, which is, you know, you can easily compare and contrast to Arnold Schwarzenegger when he was in office. I think that's a really cool thing. I feel that if somebody threatened Arnold Schwarzenegger's or Governor Schwarzenegger's child while he was in office, he would rip his shirt off and then just walk through the streets of California and try to beat the crap out of everyone until he found, the man responsible. And I do recommend it. If, again, it's Sega CD, at least go and watch the intro for the Sega CD version so you can get the voice acting for it. It's fantastic. And again, it's a mediocre arcade port. It, like I said, there's slowdown and flicker. Like, there's tons of slowdown in the game. Even with three dudes on the screen, there's slowdown. The first boss battle, there's slowdown. It's missing one of its main characters. It's has, you know, the stereotypical bad guys, which I guess is kind of funny. Like, you have the Indian looking, like the Native American looking dude, and he has like a Native American like name. And, you know, like you have Andore and the wrestler guy.
And there's the Asian fighter guys as well, who are actually short and fat.
I didn't write down their names. Yeah, and, you know, the fat Americans, which are cool. And, you know, it's just like the combat is aggravating. It's not as smooth as Streets of Rage. Like, I found myself, like, feeling like, man, I should have got a punch in there. But somehow, you know, the AI or the game decided to let that timing go to the enemy instead of myself. Like, it's just because it's a little bit of a harder game. It's definitely a more difficult game than Streets of Rage 1, 2, or 3, but I feel like it's just not an enjoyable game, and that you should be a badass when you're playing these games, because you got to keep in mind it's one man or two guys against 400 dudes throughout the course of a game. You should feel pretty powerful. Also I think it's a the best thing about this game, and I will say this flat out, is grappling enemies and then jumping up as Hagar and power bombing them. Like, that's awesome. Like, I would literally do that every time, even though it wouldn't hurt the guy as much as like just doing a punch and combo, just because it looked awesome. Like, grabbing a guy, then jumping up and then power bombing him was a ton of fun. I think Cody is pretty, he's vanilla. And I think overall, this is a vanilla-ass fighting game. Like, there's really nothing that stands out from it. And I think Streets of Rage 2, besides its visuals, does everything better.
Okay. You, in terms of this debate, you get music. I'll give you music, and I'll give you multiplayer. So the two M's. You get both of those, but the gameplay feels pretty bad in both of them. But I think that Final Fight, you know, when you talk about power bombing and different things like that and the force that you feel while doing it, you got to give the nod to Final Fight.
Right. It's the China Warrior of this conversation, okay? It's not better because it has bigger sprites. I'd rather play a game that has, you know, not as great visuals, but the gameplay is just way more enjoyable. And you know, I think the supers are way cooler in Streets of Rage 2. I mean, in Streets of Rage 1, like, you guys remember your special attack? It is a guy in a cop car with a effing rocket launcher shooting a rocket launcher towards the enemies, or shooting a rocket towards the enemies that you're fighting. Like, those power-ups are just way more enjoyable, and like, I just feel that I don't know. It's just not as good. And I, like I said, I will debate this until, you know, the sun comes up.
But you couldn't play Streets of Rage on the Super Nintendo.
No, but I had things like Battletoads and Double Dragon.
Battletoads.
And I think, like, if you look at other games like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time is another great alternative. And I won't say Double Dragon, Super Double Dragon. That's not a very good game, but I think there were other options on there. And, like, it was a system seller. Like, Streets of Rage 2 is a Sega property. It was a system seller, and there was a reason for that.
Well, I'm going to be completely honest here that I did not actually play this on the Super Nintendo this week. I played it on the PSP. It was the Capcom Classics Collection Remixed or something like that. And it actually had all three characters, and, like, sometimes there would be, like, as many as 7 enemies on the screen at one time, I believe I counted. So I played a pretty good version of it this week. But you're right. You're right about the SNES port. It's pretty bad.
It's like, if I go and get a CPS One board and put it in my arcade cab and play it that way, I'm sure it's a ton of fun with another person. But I just think specifically the Super Nintendo port is pretty bad. So again, I think if I would love to get my hand on a Sega CD copy of the game to play through that and see the, you know, if it really makes a difference.
Well, and it would be something to play on the Sega CD.
Well, yeah, I know. Dude, I almost bought a Sega CD this week too, but I looked at it and I'm like, there are no games that I want to play on this thing except maybe my Japanese version of Night Trap, and
ooh,
that's about it.
Well, what about, isn't Snatcher a Sega CD game?
It's like $4,000.
Yeah, that's true.
And, you know,
Sewer Shark.
Go left. Go right. Shoot. So, anyways, like I said, for this argument, we're comparing Super Nintendo version versus Genesis version because it is like the end, like the never-ending debate. Like, this debate was going on in this arcade forum that I'm a part of. Like, they were arguing, it's like Genesis versus Super Nintendo. It's like 23 years later, we're still having this debate. It's nuts.
So we're talking about the SNES versus Genesis versions of Final Fight?
Versus
Streets of Rage specifically. Okay. And you now feel that Final Fight is better, if I understand your argument correctly.
No, Streets of Rage 2 is way better. Maybe,
oh, okay. I must have misunderstood your argument. No,
maybe Final Fight on the Sega CD would change my mind, or maybe the arcade version would change my mind. But again, for the sake of this argument, for this podcast, we're fighting between Super Nintendo versus a Genesis game, you know?
Okay, Trey, settle this.
Final Fight, hands down.
All right, we're good.
Argument. We're going to stick around. Keep in mind that I am right. And you know what? This is another entry. You can win my copy of Final Fight because I don't want it anymore. So I'm giving away 2 games this week. My copy of Zombies Hate My Nation, Zombies Hate My Neighbors, and Final Fight.
Zombies Hate My Nation is actually a more political version of Zombies Hate My Neighbors.
Yeah, you know what? It's the UN. I don't know. Whatever. I'm getting tired. I got a Ms. Pac-Man machine sitting next to me. I want to go use it. So stick around. We're going to get into the news, and then we are going to wrap this son of a up. So stick around. Okay, we're here for the news for episode 6. And there were some pretty big retro news this past week with, first off, just kind of out of nowhere, Nintendo released Earthbound. I mean, they announced it a couple like weeks ago, but they just kind of put Earthbound up on the Wii Virtual Console in the United States after it's been up in Japan for a while. And you guys have Wii U's. Did you buy it?
Yep.
You get it, Josh?
I bought it as well. I haven't started it yet, but I'm going to do some off-TV play with that thing.
You okay with awesome. that $2 Earthbound yeah. tax?
I buy a lot of Apple products, so, you know, it's just something I've become used to.
Yes. I think it's worth it.
Well, I think
that game.
Yeah, people don't realize it also comes with a strategy guide, too, and like a PDF. You can download it as a PDF or watch it on the gamepad, which is super cool.
That is beyond cool. It's like worth the $2, that made man. Me smile that they're actually doing something that forward thinking.
Yeah.
Or backwards thinking.
Well, dude, they got to like keep. What was it, like the first or the second episode we talked about how bad Nintendo treats their fan base, or their user base, or how like poor of a job they've been doing. But I was so close to buying a Wii U this weekend. I didn't, though, because that guy never got back to me after I gave him a lowball offer. But
lost him.
Well, like I said, I'm going to be – hopefully there's going to be a price drop by the time I'm back in the States. So there's no point in having that and then not being able to use it for the next 2 months. And so, guys, Earthbound, you know, good news?
I think it's awesome news. I think it's – I just it's awesome news in terms of what you just said, Nintendo throwing its fans a bone. And actually figuring out the licensing with the music or whatever the issue was and just going ahead and biting the bullet, releasing the game and making a big deal of it. They, you know, they did a big trailer for it this week, and it's on the front page of the Wii U eShop when you go into it. It's the very first thing you see is this big banner that says Earthbound. So I think it's great. I think it's an awesome thing for fans. I don't have much retro experience with it aside from the scratch and sniff stuff. I'll toss it off the tray.
I don't have any retro experience with it either. I never played it. I remember it coming in a giant ass box.
Oh yeah!
Didn't one of your friends have the game or something like that?
What's that?
Didn't one of your friends own the game or something? Yeah. Like that?
Yeah, but I never got to play it or anything.
Did they? Was it set on fire?
Nope. Okay. Nope. This wasn't the friend with a crazy religious mother. Gotcha. But yeah, I remember it coming in that giant Super NES box, which is pretty cool. But I'm looking forward to playing it for the first time. I think it's going to be a good game. And, you know, I do think Nintendo kind of just suddenly releasing it was kind of like a, here, you know, we know we're going through a rough spot right now. We want you all to know we're still here. Here's Earthbound. Download it.
Yeah, it's kind of like people who are trying.
Crashes, if your Wii U crashes, you lose it, though. Sorry.
Yeah,
yeah. There's still always that hint of a bad aftertaste. It's like drinking a diet soda. It tastes good at first, and then you swallow and think about it for a minute.
Well, it's like one of those things that, like, this shouldn't be something that we should be asking for. It should be something that's kind of obvious, and I wish that Nintendo starts doing some more of the obvious and not just some of the stuff that we have to keep asking. Like, man, I would love a black 3DS. Love a black 3DS. Release it. I'll give you $180.
Or give us the special editions that everyone else is getting.
Oh yeah, like there's been 35 special edition 3DSs in Japan. Like in the last 2 years, it's nuts.
There's yet another cool one. What were we gonna say, Trey?
The Luigi one. I mean, I don't know if I would buy that one because I mean, I don't really like the design of it. But, I mean, like put out like a green one with like the Luigi like. The L on his hat or something. That'd be sweet. I would get rid of it. Or, you know, I have a 3DS XL right now, but if they released a Zelda-themed 3DS with the new Zelda game coming out, I will have it. It will be mine.
Well, Kevin, you said they will or won't do that. What do you think?
Oh, they will, because I think I can't remember if it was at E3. Reggie did a interview where, like, people were, like, they're giving him good questions. I think it was... IGN that did the interview, but they're saying, like, why don't we have different colors of the 3DS yet? Why does Japan have all these different colors?
I think that was Jeff Keighley from Game Trailers.
Okay.
He grew it in pretty hard.
He did.
So it's like, you know, when are we going to get, you know, new hardware or whatever? So anyways, like Reggie, whether it was that one or another interview, said something along the lines of, well, every time they've released a limited edition 3DS here, it's sold out. Like, it's completely sold out. So they're going to continue doing that because it's, you know, obviously been financially worthwhile for them. And again, I think it's one of those things that they need to, like, that will drive sales. Like, people, like, you see people who buy two or three or four 3DSs, or like the people that buy multiple Game Boy Micros and stuff like that to just because of the different limited edition versions. I think people will do that here. At least there's a subset of 50 or 100 or 150,000 people that will be willing to do that. So I think it's something that they should continue to do.
Yeah, we want to give you money, Nintendo.
Seriously, please, you know, release that and take my money, please.
Yeah, or do a little Year of Luigi logo. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Like in the corner. I would buy that too. Yeah.
Yeah. I've got a couple of Luigi things in that poster that's coming, you know. Hey. I don't know. Like I just wish
something
they would.
Something that says,
you know,
"I do it, I do it,
I do it,
I do it."
Oh, they need to embrace that sort of thing. I'm going to say, I went to this to this Nintendo event this weekend that they had at GameStop for Pikmin 3. So it was at 200 GameStop locations across the U.S. They had it in Lexington, Kentucky, a couple of days in a row at two of the larger GameStop locations, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. I went to both of them, mainly to get a lot of street passes, and I did. I got a ton, like over 20, which is not something you really do a lot in the United States unless you're at like a video game conference or something like that. But anyway, it did just sort of remind me, we're talking about Nintendo not treating their fans well. This was a really cool event, just being around all these Nintendo fans and Nintendo actually treating them well, and giving out stickers and patches and different things and letting them play Pikmin 3 as well as Mario and Luigi Dream Team, which comes out on 3DS in a couple of weeks. There's just a really great vibe there, and it felt different than other similar events I've been to hosted by other companies. Doing a lot of like these Best Buy events and GameStop events and like getting out there and really trying to win the PR battle because they've made a lot of ugly decisions in the last few months. And I thought this weekend was a nice step against that.
Yeah. They need to start, you know, doing more stuff like that. Cause the PR battle is fine, but they need to win the game battle too. And they need to get on the ball.
And soon. Pikmin 3 is great though. I will say after playing it, I know that there are a lot of other podcasts that are talking about it a ton, so I won't go into too much detail about it, but it's a game to look forward to. It comes out in a couple of weeks. The gamepad is a map the whole time, and the Wiimote and Nunchuck are your controls, and you use the Wiimote like a pointer, so it's just a really smart control scheme.
It'll be interesting to see what happens, see what the reviews are. I know on the A4 podcast this week, they kind of were not super, super high on it, so.
Yeah, Mark McDonald kind of put it through the ringer.
We'll see. All right, and then also on the opposite end of the spectrum from Pikmin, at least, great new game is getting a great game is getting a remake or a new game in the series, and that's Strider was announced at Comic-Con for the PS4, the PS3, the Xbox 360, and the Xbox One, no Wii U, no PlayStation Vita support, and it's more or less, I think people on the internet have done a great job describing it as like a Shadow Complex / Bionic Commando type remake, reimagining of the game, and it is being done by kind of a not-so-great developer, the guys that are actually also doing the Killer Instinct game, the new Killer Instinct for Xbox One. And they made a bunch of junk in the past, and people are skeptical, but the original producer for Strider is going to be back on the team, or at least consulting to make sure it doesn't turn out terribly.
That's got to be a good thing. Either of you guys excited about playing this?
I just ordered it for the Sega Dreamcast, and it's going to be here this week, so I can't wait to play that 8-mega cart of Strider for the Sega Genesis. I've never played that game before.
Oh wow! Yeah, it's a really cool game.
It was super expensive, man. It was like $90
just for Strider.
Yeah, for Genesis.
Huh?
KB Toys, 90 bones. It was not cheap. Whoa.
Yeah.
It was 8 megs, dude. It had 8 megs in the cart. Did so you not hear me?
You gotta tack on like at least an extra $40 for that. You're
eight
right.
Megs. It's like when those Neo Geo carts have 330 megs in them. Like that's why they cost $800,000.
Right. It's $40 per 4 megs. So you do the math.
Absolutely.
You're actually getting a deal on those Neo Geo games when you think about it.
Dude, I don't get into Neo Geo. I got in a bad habit of collecting Neo Geo stuff and like getting the shock boxes and stuff like that. Bad thing to do. Don't do it. Get one of those 160 in one carts and just get a one slot. All right. So, for game recommendations this week, because I don't know what you guys have, I'm going to start it off. Because I just got a Sega Genesis, I also went on a little bit of an eBay binge for Genesis stuff. I bought like 10 games and like the good stuff. I got like Michael Jackson's Moonwalker and Ghouls and Ghosts and some other stuff I can't remember. And the game that I'm going to recommend this week is the very first game that I ever played, or maybe it was the second time. All right. Well, anyways, it was one of the very first games that I played on a Sega Genesis at my buddy JJ's house, whose family was rich and owned two McDonald's and lived in a mansion. And he had like every single game for Nintendo, NES. And then he got a Genesis and had tons of games. Like, we played Bulls versus Blazers a lot. Anyways, the game is Mercs. Mercs for the Sega Genesis arcade port that is fantastic. It is so good. It is a ton of fun, and you can play with two players.
And I have a ton of nostalgia for that game, so we should do that at some point.
Oh, God. I say we do that for Mini Boss the week after this week before I head out.
Okay. Glorious. You played that game, Trey?
I have not.
Oh, God. It's so good.
Yeah, you're going to be freaking out,
just,
man.
Just dumping like... Just like bullets and vehicles and
yeah, and you're like diving over stuff and great, yeah, it's rad.
Great music. You got your shirt off. It's the best vacation a guy could ever have. Trey, what do you have for a game this week?
How do you guys feel about Mario Kart?
That's your
recommendation. I love Mario Kart.
Super Mario Kart?
No. That's not my recommendation. I was going to recommend a better racing game than Mario Kart, in my opinion. On N64, Diddy Kong Racing.
Ah.
It's got what?
Fantastic.
It's got airplanes,
game.
Right?
Yeah, it's got airplanes. It's got hovercraft, and it's got carts. It's got a pretty good cast of characters, too. Two of them actually went on to get their own games, Banjo and Conker the Squirrel, before he became an alcoholic. He was actually in Diddy Kong Racing.
Oh, yeah, those were his glory years.
Yeah. It's a fun game. It's got kind of like an adventure mode because you like basically you're on this island and you go through like all these different stages and like there's a final boss that you race against and everything. I think his name was Whiz Pig. But the cool thing about this is like all the characters like have like little kind of things about them. Like there's a mouse named Pipsy and she's really light to control. So it, you know, like they control differently. So it's, you know, There's a lot of strategy involved in the game, and it actually got re-released on DS, and they added some extra characters in there, like I think Dixie Kong and Tiny Kong were added, and then like there's a genie that kind of serves as your guide. His name's Taj. He gets added to the DS version as well.
I totally forgot about the DS version. Doesn't it have online play as well?
I don't remember. I didn't ever get the DS version because I still have the N64 version, and they took Banjo and Conker out because obviously, you know, at that time Rare had already gone to Microsoft, so they couldn't get the rights to those characters. So it's a lot of fun. I remember we played it a good bit, and we played, you know, me and my buddies played a lot of Mario 64, but when we got a hold of this one, we thought it was a pretty good alternative, and in some ways it's better. You know, the aircraft and the hovercraft really kind of add a new element to the racing genre for N64 at least. So it was a fun arcadey type racing game. Definitely recommend it. It's actually the sixth highest selling N64 game. So
I didn't know that either.
It was pretty popular. So it's good.
N64 was super popular with furries, so that makes sense.
that must be the reason. I think Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed is like the only racing game I can really think of that has that same vibe as Diddy Kong Racing.
Game. That game is so good.
Yeah, it is. It's solid. I mean, it's really good on every platform except 3DS.
Frame rate. Yeah.
I grabbed that on the Steam sale. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, the Wii U version is really nice as well because you can play with five players locally.
Oh wow! Cool
gamepad.
Great characters too, like you
Wreck-It Ralph,
Hayabusa, or whatever from
Wreck-It Ralph,
and John C. Reilly. And Josh, what do you have for this week?
Evo was last weekend. I know I already talked about it, so I'm not going to do that all over again. Fighting game tournament. Probably the biggest game there was, well, I guess you could say Street Fighter, but Ultimate Marvel vs. Capcom 3 had a big following. Everybody was really excited about it, so much so that they booed the presenters who were playing the new Killer Instinct game on Xbox One right before it. I'm going to recommend Marvel vs. Capcom 2 in honor of last week's Evo because it had me sort of revisiting Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Awesome game. It was played competitively for years and years and years after its release. The best version for consoles is the Dreamcast version, and that's the version that I still play it on as well. Have everything unlocked on my VMU. I get to put in a lot of hours to do that.
Dude, you gotta buy all those dudes from the store? Holy crap.
Yeah, you have to just like, it's like 100 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
You just have to play it and play it and play it, which is no problem for me, though, because it's so much fun. And Marvel vs. Capcom 2 still holds up really well. It's not as expensive as it used to be to pick up because of the re-releases on PSN and Xbox Live Arcade. So do yourself a favor and take yourself a ride on Marvel vs. Capcom 2.
I have a secondary one this week. And like I said last week, I've been searching on Craigslist and flea markets and eBay for stuff. And today I hit up the flea market and got up a little bit late. My alarm went off, but the Zelda 2 title screen music for some reason did not come on. And so I got to the flea market late and everything was kind of picked through. There just wasn't much gaming stuff this week. Then came home and was kind of bummed out. Like, all right, I'll look on Craigslist. I might as well. I'm just chilling right now, just looking at Craigslist real quick. And then I see a Ms. Pac-Man machine locally with no picture attached to it. But it's about 30 minutes away, so I email immediately. Like, literally, it was like a minute and a half after the Craigslist ad was posted when I was looking at the time thing. And I set up a meeting for 4 o'clock, drove into Boston, which is about half an hour away, checked out this Ms. Pac-Man that is all original. It is original paint. It is in pretty good shape for being 30 years old. It has some scratches, has some initials scratched into the side like you would see at any arcade, like two letters plus two letters because they are in love and I'm sure they got divorced. And the machine is in really nice shape. So I brought home a Ms. Pac-Man machine to replace my old Ms. Pac that I ended up selling about a year ago for $550, and I picked this one up for $400. So I kind of made out with $150, and I can't wait to finish up the podcast so I can clean it up and play some Ms. Pac. It's a great, great game. It's a great cab too.
I'm so very jealous. I'm not even gonna lie. Like, Ms. Pac-Man is so awesome.
I was telling you guys before, since you're in the South, I swear, like, arcade machines are really cheap. I hear people who drive down to, you know, places like Alabama and Georgia to pick up machines just because they can get such a discount and it's worth renting a U-Haul or having them shipped up here. So find a guy that has a barn full of old arcade machines and you too can have a Ms. Pac-Man or a Xenophobe machine in your living room.
Brilliant. I'm all over it.
All right, so for next week's episode, we got two more games that we're going to hit on, and I think it's going to be it's the second to last episode before I leave for Japan. So these are going to be tight because I don't know what my situation is necessarily going to be the first week that I get there. I land on a Thursday, and I don't know if I'm going to have a lot of time. Actually, I could probably play something on the airplane, but anyways, the games that we have for next week are, first off, we're going to be playing Shatterhand for the NES. This is not a super well-known game, but it is fantastic. Made by, oh my God, I can't remember. It's the guys that make all the Bases Loaded games, Jaleco. And
yep.
Also, we're going to be playing SimCity on whatever platform you like to play SimCity on, because that is a fantastic PC game. And the overall, pretty much a maybe top 5, top 10 game of all time for gaming history, and it's important. So those are the two that we are going to hit on next week. But until then, I would love for you guys to, like I said before, go on iTunes, submit a review, jump on the website, submit comments on the show notes for the episode. Let us know what you think. What do you want us to be playing? Jump into the thread on NeoGAF and you know, spread the word of the podcast. 6 episodes or 7 episodes in, if you count number 0. This is, again, continuing to be a ton of fun. I love doing it, and hopefully you guys out there are enjoying it just as much as we are. So, again, Trey, Josh, thanks so much for spending a Sunday, and I guess until next time, we're going to just punch the crap out of a bunch of stuff because we have bionic arms. We'll see you next time.
Later.
Later.